This is June 10th, 2021. I'm with Panabasa. There's been an academic article published with him and I in it. So we're going to discuss this. So welcome, Panabasa.
Yeah, the old Brian.
Good to have you back.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been about a month, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah. So what's this article? It's like 30 pages long. Who published it?
Let's see. I'll take a look. It's by Ann Gleig, University of Central Florida, and Brenda Grace Artinger, who is an independent scholar. And this article is in the Journal of Global Buddhism that I had never heard of before. More white people than like black people, or it's like, I think they said something like only 5% of Western Buddhists are black, something like that. But I mean, it's like, it's just unrealistic to expect black people or like most Hispanic people to just become like latte liberals who like this kind of Buddhism that's being sold in the Dharma halls and the multi-million dollar luxury meditation resorts like Spirit Rock.
I think a lot of people don't like it. This is a top-down globalist agenda. So even most liberals, maybe they like it because they've been brainwashed to like it, but they wouldn't actually like it. A lot of those people probably don't like it either, but they're either going along with it or they've been brainwashed to like it because of these globalist forces, I would say.
Yeah, well, obviously they've been indoctrinated. It's just impossible that all of these people just on their own, just of their own volition, have started just repeating the same slogans and catchwords and, you know, just all the same, you know, equity, diversity, inclusion, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's
equality,
not like,
freedom, fraternity, you're right.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, they all just came up with that independently of each other, especially considering just how ridiculous it is.
Of course. It's not true. Equality, there's no real equality. I remember one of your sayings, there's no equality in 31 planes of existence. People comment, that was a great line from Panabasa.
Yeah. And they just can't deal with that. You know,
what do they mean by freedom? Janice Shaw said, freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Well, what exactly do you mean by freedom? What about brotherhood, fraternity? Well, what does that mean? You know, these are catchy words, but they're not actually true, you'd say.
Yeah. Or like here, so it is normative in that we take a critical perspective on these reactionary anti-social justice forms of American convert Buddhism. First, we critique the manner in which right-wing Buddhists, from reactionary centrists to the alt-right, seek in various ways to naturalize their own social and political positionality. And it's like they reinforce and reproduce normatively gendered and racialized dynamics. So it's like they're accusing like the anti-Marxist Buddhists in the West. You know, this whole article is about how there are some Western Buddhists who are rejecting the whole diversity, equity, and inclusion, cultural, critical race theory, you know, the trans, you know, being trans friendly and everything. It's like they're saying that, you know, they reinforce and reproduce normatively gendered and racialized dynamics. But I mean, like traditional Buddhism.
What? Traditional Buddhism?
Yeah, no, traditional way. Buddhism is normatively gendered. You read the Pali texts and it is normatively gendered. You know, you've got males and you've got females. And then you've got a few, like they're called pandikas, which are like eunuchs or like hermaphrodites. But I mean, you've got male and female, and then you've got a few that are just kind of in between that are sort of intermediate between male and female, and that's it. And there's no way that, I mean, even the ancient texts go against these guys and they don't care, because right here, like it says, for us, who it's like the authors or maybe the whole leftist Buddhist movement that they're talking about, for us, Buddhism is simply what Buddhists do. And it's just a sociology thing. There's almost no mention of Buddhist doctrine at all in this entire article. They're just talking about Buddhism as anybody who calls themselves a Buddhist, and whatever anybody who calls himself a Buddhist does, well, that's what Buddhism is. That's what Buddhists do. And there's almost no spirituality at all even hinted at in this entire article. It's just more Marxist stuff.
I think that's part of the goal. like part of Marxism is to get rid of spirituality and religion. I think the goal is to undermine the actual core of karma and rebirth, a spiritual uplift, a spiritual aspiration. That's probably on purpose, not by neglect.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there are people at the top who understand that what they're trying to do is just undermine Western civilization or whatever, you know, they're just trying to overthrow the system so that they can replace it with the brave new world. But yeah, it's just so bizarre. Like we've see another recent DEI, that's diversity, equity, and inclusion development in these communities, has been the emergence of a transgender Buddhist network.
Like, oh, please give me a break. Oh
yeah,
my
yeah.
God.
But I mean, you read the Pali text, the Pali Tipitaka, which is the oldest existing Buddhist scriptures, going as far back as you can, getting as close to the Buddha himself as you can. And according to those oldest texts, transgender people are not allowed even to join the Sangha. They are prohibited, because they are neither male nor female. They're not fully male, they're not fully female, and therefore they're like aberrant in some way. They're not complete, and so they're not allowed even to join the Sangha. And now it's like, because cultural Marxism, even, I mean, the Buddha wasn't wise enough, so it's like they're improving on the Buddha, on like what the Buddha was teaching, just through cultural Marxism or whatever they want to call it. And then, I mean, they don't even care what the Buddha really said.
That's a good point. Thanks for bringing up that point, Panabas. A good point.
Yeah. It's like, here, in 2019, Ken Manders and Elizabeth Marston published Transcending Trans Buddhist Voices, an anthology in which over 30 trans, genderqueer, and non-binary practitioners shared their experiences of empowerment and healing. And that's supposed to be like some kind of mainstream Buddhism or something. But it's just... I mean, it's just using Buddhism as just a kind of label for a status or something. And then it's all the rest of it is just the standard, you know, social justice stuff, which is the same in, you know, like the liberal Christian groups, like Unitarians and Methodists and stuff. And it's just through some weird coincidence, all of the ultra liberals in all of the religions are teaching the same gospel, except for maybe a few little differences in jargon. They don't really care what the Buddha originally taught.
Yeah, I mean, they just lay it on so thick here. I mean, I'm wondering, I'm looking for some substance here. Keep going. Now we scroll down too to show the audience something, but you can go bit by bit if you want. These are the highlighted parts you wanted to talk about, right?
Yeah, they were the interesting parts to me.
Yeah, very good. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like over on this side, it's like Asian American Buddhists have been marginalized in American Buddhism, when actually most Buddhists in America are Asian Americans. The author just ignores those. It's like, the Asians have their own temples. You know, there's
Thai
temples.
Yeah, I see them. They go to their own temples.
Sri Lankan temples, Vietnamese temples, and they are not racially diverse at all. I mean, you don't have Cambodians even going to the Burmese temples, or Thais going to the Sri Lankan temples. I mean, they are just racially like what do you call it?
Segregated, or they're nationally too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a monoculture.
Yeah. White Buddhists are completely separate from those. They usually have very little relationship or no relationship at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. I see it on Vancouver.
So then it's like the American Buddhists, who are actually more culturally diverse than any other Buddhists in America, like the Western Buddhists, because just about anybody's welcome to come. They're the ones who are being attacked. When like a Sri Lankan temple is going to be way less culturally diverse than some kind of Western Buddhist place, but they don't really care. So going through this a little bit more. Oh yeah, see the female authors here, and I think a lot of the people that are quoted here are like female authorities on Buddhism. She divided up the three anti-social justice kinds of Western Buddhism into reactionary centrists, right-wing Buddhists, and alt-right Buddhists. And our friend Manu, I think, she classified as a right-wing Buddhist. But you and I are considered to be just hardcore alt-right. In fact, she accused you of being about as hard of an alt-right Buddhist as there is in the entire West.
Oh, wow, what an honor. I'm the most alt-right in the entire West. Maybe that's true. I mean, not many people in the alt-right are into Buddhism. Maybe that's true.
I don't think so.
Insult or an honor, I wonder.
No, I don't think that you're really all that hard right, you know? I mean,
Yeah,
I mean, you and I both started off as pretty much lefties, and then the left just went insane, and so I didn't even lurch all that far right. I just pretty much stayed where I was, just kind of a libertarian, you know.
I kind of think myself as not quite right. I'm a truther. I'm in the truth movement. Maybe I'm a centrist. I'm also in the center, but I'm just a part of the truth movement. I supported the alt-right when it came out in 2015. I thought they had some good ideas, but it's not like I identify now with being alt-right, you know?
Yeah, I don't either. But she was saying that you and I are two of the founders of the alt Buddhism Reddit page. And I haven't done anything with that page in like probably a couple of years. I mean,
told me about it. I joined it. I just contributed a little bit, but I haven't done much either.
Yeah, I helped to found it it was like sort of the mission statement on the sidebar. Obviously, it was influenced by me. I mean, there's obviously some of my language there because the guy who founded it was consulting with me as kind of like a technical advisor on getting stuff right, you know, wanting to get the Buddhism right, you know. And then they just went like completely like militant, and I kind of lost interest. And so I haven't done anything with it in probably a couple of years. I don't know if you've done anything with it either. But
no, not much, just a few posts.
Yeah, the author knows almost nothing about us, really. I think because it looks like she found Manu on his Facebook page or something like that, where he was calling himself like a right-wing Buddhist or something. And then he did a link. I think what happened was, he was in this other Buddhist Facebook group, and then he posted one of our videos, yours and mine. You know, we did a video together, and he thought it was interesting and thought-provoking. So he posted it on that Buddhist page, and then he just got kicked out of the Facebook group for that, for even linking us.
Oh, I didn't know. I'm sorry, I didn't know he got kicked out for a video. They do link our video on this academic piece. They do link our video. Did you know that?
Yeah. And also like one blog
post. It's under my name. It's all alphabetical. It's under Rue. They have a link to one of our videos.
Yeah. And
the audience as well, right? We can link this academic piece below this video. We have a link for you below this video.
Yeah. And then they're talking about here repenting of the suffering produced by capitalism. They're saying that that is just like straight Buddhism, that capitalism is bad. Although really, I've read a book by, I think it was Richard Gombrich on the origins of Buddhism, like early Buddhism. And he was pointing out that Buddhism in India was similar to Protestantism in Europe, Western Europe, where it was the new capitalists in the towns like Anathapindika. You know, he was like a magnate, you know, he was a rich guy, he was a capitalist. And he was like the Buddha's main donor, you know, and he's praised to the skies in the suttas. He's the one who donated the Jetavana, you know, like the main monastery where the Buddha spent most of his time, or at least, you know, the plurality of his time. You know, he spent more time there than anywhere else. And I mean, he was this rich, like a moneylender or a banker or something, you know. And it was these people in the towns who were most interested in this new philosophy of Buddhism. You know, they weren't the traditionalists necessarily. But, you know, they were like the new capitalists that were springing up in the new cities of India. And so, I mean, saying that, you know, just emphasizing that capitalism is like anti-Buddhist is really just propaganda. It just shows an ignorance of Buddhism, really. But then again, I mean, they mention almost nothing about actual Buddhist dogma or like any of the actual teachings of Buddhist philosophy. It's mostly all this sociology stuff.
Doesn't this make you concerned how Buddhism will change in America in the decades to come or a century to come? It's going to be all this left stuff. Is Buddhism just going to be washed away? Like, where are we going? Like, where is it going? It must make you ponder about that, right?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, we've talked about that a lot. Buddhism always was kind of left-wing thing in America, because it was mostly the hippies and the beatniks before them that were interested. And it was always like a countercultural kind of a thing. The traditionalists, conservatives in the West will just go with the traditional religious system, which is Christianity. And so it's like the radicals and the nonconformists and that kind of thing that are favoring Buddhism more than anybody else. And it's kind of interesting that the authors have a lot to say about our friend Manu. And here's one thing is, as he puts it, to be offended is really to not grant someone the benefit of the doubt and shows a weakness in character on the part of the offended, which is actually true. I don't know if he got that from me or not, but
I've told
you more than once how it's like when two people are talking, both of them have a moral duty. One person has the moral duty, the person who's talking has the moral duty not to deliberately offend anybody, you know, not to be speaking in order to hurt somebody, and also not to tell lies. But then the person who's listening also has the moral duty to forgive the person, even if they do say something hurtful or say something that isn't true.
Yeah, you were talking about that last year in relation to when the Vancouver Shambhala Center kicked me out because, you know, somebody was offended by my videos, not by my behavior there or anything I did. Yeah. So he said, that's on them. If they feel offended, you know, they have to use the Buddhism to work on their own head instead of asking me to leave.
So here's, she just completely rejects that because she's going with the whole cultural Marxist or social justice idea that you cannot say anything that might offend a marginalized person. And then alt-right Buddhists, that's where you are mentioned here. Ru is a key figure in the most extreme of the right-wing Buddhists, the self-proclaimed alt-right Buddhists.
Oh, wow.
And there you go. You're famous.
Yeah, well, I've been printing it all over the internet. People Google Brian Ruhe, get like a dozen pages.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, it is kind of nice that she used my quote of Starbucks Buddhism.
Yeah, that was your quote. It was one of our talks, right?
It was a blog post that I was talking about how Western Buddhism is really a white elitist movement. And so they don't really want it to be a white elitist movement, but it is mostly white elitists. You know, it's like college educated white people that make good money are most of the Western, you know, Euro Buddhists in the West. And they're so ashamed of that they're just desperately trying to recruit as many Black people as they can to become Buddhists, as though Black people have any interest in becoming like latte liberals. I mean, I assume there are some, but as a general rule, I don't think they're ever going to get very many of them. And if they get anybody who just, you know, anybody shows any interest at all, next thing you know, they're going to be a teacher with top billing just because they're so desperate. You know, it's like affirmative action.
Oh,
whether
no.
you're qualified to be a Dhamma teacher or not is irrelevant. I mean, if your skin color is not white, then boom, you're fast tracked up to the top.
We've seen that with the Insight Meditation Society at Dharma.org. They find a Black teacher and they really promote her and take her on tour and publish her book. Yeah, they do that.
Yeah. Here it says two key members of the alt Buddhism Reddit are Brian Ru and Panyobasa Bhikkhu, which I don't know. I mean, I may have been a key member right when it started because I was sort of like the technical advisor with regard to getting the Buddhist philosophy right, that kind of thing.
I guess that's true. Like when you and I started together in 2019, we called it alt Buddhism. I remember you called it that. I thought, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. We're kind of alt Buddhism. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree
alternative
that.
Buddhism. Yeah, I see nothing wrong with that. And then she gets the detail wrong that I was ordained in Burma, which is not true. Let's see. But Buddhism, there was even more. In Buddhism, in India, you had the caste system. You know, and the Buddha, you know, he made fun of the caste system sometimes, but he wasn't making membership drives of like the lower castes. Most Buddhist monks probably in the Buddhist time were of the upper classes. You know, they were like Brahmins and Kshatriyas. They're like more of the Indo-European or Aryan race or ethnicity. So, yeah, it's like... If what we've got now is problematic and Buddha should be speaking out against it, then, I mean, the situation was even worse in the Buddha's time and he wasn't saying much against it. I mean, he was just saying, you know, anybody can join the Sangha. You know, he wasn't doing membership drives, trying to get more Shudras to join the Sangha or more like Aboriginal hill tribes. He wasn't starting off his sermons by apologizing to the Aborigines of India, the Dravidians, that the Aryans had stolen their land or anything.
I know, gosh. That.
Yeah, I mean that's essentially what they're doing. It's like even that Zen convention that started this whole article. You know, they start off by acknowledging that they're having their convention on land stolen by the Native Americans, stolen from the Native Americans, you know. But I mean, if that's so wise and enlightened, I mean, why wasn't the Buddha the same thing? It's like, before I deliver this sermon, O bhikkhus, I acknowledge that we have stolen the land from the Indus Valley civilization.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way of the world. That happens everywhere. That's so funny that you say that. The Buddha didn't say that. Thank you.
Yeah. And I mean, he was living in a much less, you know, there was less equity, way less equity in the Buddhist time, you know, way less inclusion in the Buddhist time. You literally had a caste system. And I mean, he did make fun of the caste system sometimes. You know, he was saying you should judge a person by their individual character instead of just by, you know, who their parents were. But still, I mean, it's just bizarre that they've just taken Buddhism and just tried to reform it into something completely different. They don't really even care what the Buddha actually taught originally. Let's see, trying to look here. It's talking about Jordan Peterson also, because towards the end, she's just getting into the whole, like, the intellectual dark web and just sort of the origins of, like, right-wing Buddhism and its connections with other kind of right-wing anti-SJW movements. So mentioning Richard Spencer invented the word alt-right in 2008. That was kind of interesting. See. Yeah, members of the international of the dark web network legitimate capitalism and American imperialism, see themselves as defenders of Western civilization, in quotes, emphasize biological gender differences and attack critical race theory. As though, I mean, this is something bad, but I mean, for me, I mean, that's, yeah, where do I sign up if that's what they're doing? Legitimate, I mean, see themselves as defenders of Western civilization, as though there's something wrong with that. It's just kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, this whole article, yeah. I mean, it was not easy to read. It was just very cringy.
Yeah, I mean, I read about less than a quarter of it. Yeah, it was kind of draining my energy. Thanks for reading it. You read the whole thing, right? Thank you.
Well, I kind of scrolled through it and read some of the highlights that I had.
Yeah,
I'll probably write a blog post about this sooner or later too. You got Bhikkhu Bodhi. He's one of the good guys in this article. Let's see.
Yeah. We should mention Bhikkhu Bodhi is he's Jewish. He's an American Buddhist monk. He's been a monk since 1972, but he definitely has this lefty agenda in Buddhism.
He
promotes a woman's right to choose.
It's a disrobing event for a monk rights.
Women's reproductive rights. Women's reproductive rights, but it's a disrobing offense for a monk to advocate abortion, or if a woman has abortion based on a monk's advice. So
yeah, I think he was really doing bad. He was doing some pro Hillary Clinton stuff and anti Trump stuff and that.
Yeah, 2016 is openly pro Hillary. Yeah, we've done videos. People can scroll back our videos on Bhikkhu Bodhi.
Yeah, here in the references of Panyobasa Bhikkhu. This was my blog post about liberal Western Buddhism as a white elitist movement. Let's see, Brian Rue, here we go. Brian Rue, 2019, introducing Brian Rue. That was on the alt Buddhism Reddit. And then also there's the David Reynolds and Brian Rue, which is up here. That was the phenomenon of right-wing Western Buddhism. That was the video that Manu posted on the Facebook page that got him kicked off the Facebook.
So this is actually a YouTube video on your channel, the phenomenon of right-wing Western Buddhism, right? That's on your channel.
I assume so, or maybe, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So there you go. I suppose I should stop the screen share. There we go. But yeah, it's cringy as hell, this whole article. But yeah. I assume that most academic articles and like journal articles about Buddhism are just as bad as that, just as lame and just not really even caring that much about what Buddhism originally was meant to be, but just talking about Buddhism as like a sociological movement and how it just mutates and whatever Buddhists do, that's what Buddhism is. and whatever Buddhists believe, I mean, that's what Buddhism is, and they don't really even care what the original is, because it's, they're postmodernists, I assume, so they consider truth and objectivity to be just like a cultural construct and a tool of white patriarchal oppression and all that. So you just write what you feel like writing, and if it sounds good enough that people start believing it, then you won, essentially.
Yeah, so they're subjectivists are saying there is no objective truth, objective reality. It's all subjective. It's whatever you want it to be. So they're overthrowing the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. They're just throwing out the Buddha's teaching by making it all subjective, whatever you want Buddhism to be.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. Not good. And that's not honoring the Buddha. That's not paying respects to the Buddha.
Yeah, well, I don't think she really mentioned the Buddha in the entire article. Whether she mentioned Gautama Buddha or not, maybe she did. Maybe I just didn't notice. Probably in there somewhere. Wouldn't surprise me, but still, I mean, that obviously wasn't the point. The point is essentially trying to explain how the dysfunction or problem of non-Marxist Buddhists has arisen in the West. You know, it's like the whole social justice thing took over Buddhism like around 2015 or so. And then, the article seems to be, you know, what is this problem that not all Western Buddhists are just becoming social justice warriors? And then, she largely just ignores all the Asian Buddhists, that really most Buddhists in the West are Asians. I mean, that's just completely, like, somehow just misses out. She just misses that completely. Or maybe kind of mentions it and then just ignores it for the sake of the argument.
I guess she's upset with American Buddhists who actually want to practice Buddhism, the sincere practicing, meditating Buddhists, and they're not social justice warriors. So she's probably upset about that.
although I'm not exactly sure what she would even consider to be practicing Buddhism, unless it's like nowadays practicing Buddhism for somebody like her would be, you know, mindfulness of white privilege or something like that. Because they're actually teaching that kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you go to the IMS website, dharma.org, they've got books called White Awake about, you know, being aware of your intrinsic white supremacy and racism. It's just terrible to actually write.
Yeah. If you read the references, you'll find lots more of those. You know, the trans voices in Buddhism and all that kind of thing.
It goes on and on, just over the top. And you wonder, you know, some people must take it seriously because they publish it, and some people must wonder about this, but it's brainwashing people.
Well, a lot of it is just the academic mind, you know, like academics, when they write about Buddhism, you know, it doesn't even occur to them maybe that Buddhism is true or not. They're just seeing it as something to write about and just kind of something to manipulate to further their narrative or something. Because I mean, really, there's like actually following the Pali texts or the ancient Buddhist texts. I mean, that was kind of hinted at a little bit. And to some degree, she was even blaming the reactionary quote unquote Western Buddhists for really emphasizing, you know, the importance of following, you know, sort of an Asian style Buddhism in the West, where you're following like the original tradition instead of just letting it mutate for the sake of conforming to social justice ideals.
Yeah, my gosh. Yeah. What else can we say about this? Academic piece. Oh, academic hit piece.
yeah, sort of. I mean, it was kind of like, what can we do about Western Buddhists who don't follow social justice? I mean, what are we going to do? So, yeah, it's really a cringy article. I managed to read all of it, but it was not a pleasant experience for me. It was kind of interesting though. It's sort of like seeing into the mind of, you know, like an indoctrinated social justice warrior or whatever they're called nowadays. That's kind of an obsolete word now.
Yeah, but you could use this video to reply to both the authors. What would you like to say to them right now in this video?
Like to say to them? Well, first of all, I just point out to them that if you read the most ancient texts, you've got, you're either biologically male or you're biologically female, or you can't join the Sangha, period.
Of course, to them, Sangha doesn't mean, like to us, to Buddha, Sangha means ordained monks and nuns. But to Americans, Sangha just means your meditation group in somebody's living room. It means your community of your buddies who meditate together.
Yeah, you don't even have to keep five precepts to be Sangha in so, like
so you can't be transgender. Buddhism. Yeah, you can be transgender and American, that type of Sangha.
Yeah, apparently you can be anything really, because I mean if you exclude anyone, that's exclusionary. You know, that's the DEI in the that she considers to be the important thing, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. I mean, I mean inclusion means you can't kick out anybody unless it's maybe white people.
Yeah, unless it's white people, it's getting to that. You want to give them any advice about what real Buddhism is or right speech? Because they're publishing this and people are reading it, you know?
Well, I mean, they should seriously read some of the Pali texts, which are the oldest Buddhist texts there are, and just maybe consider, you know, just question themselves. Like, what if this is true? I mean, what if the Buddha really was enlightened? And I mean, if the Buddha, in a much less equitable culture than what we've got now, if he wasn't going on tirades against it, I mean, why should we? I mean, all you have to do like the Buddha did. He just said, the doors are open, anybody can come in. You know, it's like the song, when you enter the Sangha, it's like all the different rivers flowing into the sea, and it all just becomes the sea. And, you know, all the different classes and races and everything, they just disappear, and you're all the sons of the Buddha, you know? And, yeah, I mean, he said that, which is fine, but he wasn't doing like recruitment drives to get more, you know, really dark skinned people to like become Buddhists or anything such thing as that. Even though the situation was worse in the Buddhist time with regard to social justice than it is now. I mean, they had literally had a caste system, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, you can't really say anything to them. I mean, she's read a lot of this, like alt-right or alt-Buddhism or reactionary Buddhism. She's calling it different names. I mean, she's read all this stuff, and, you know, she's getting some of it right. She's putting a lot of it in quotes, you know, defending Western civilization because she doesn't like it. So she wants to kind of put scare quotes or something around it just to kind of delegitimize it. But, yeah, I mean, she's been exposed to all the arguments. I mean, she's had to study the arguments in order to write the article. She's drunk the Kool-Aid so much that just truth doesn't have much of an effect on her, or just rationality or objectivity just doesn't have much of an effect on them.
Yeah, I would say she's following an agenda. I guess we're running out of time. We should wrap up soon. But yeah, it's good of you to bring this article, the attention of our audience. I appreciate that. It's not often we're published in an academic article.
Yeah, it was kind of strange being cited in an academic article. But like I say, it's the Journal of Global Buddhism, and it's volume 22, number one. So it was, the year 2021. So it was this year that it got published.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a link below for the audience. They can take a look if they want to.
Yeah, if we remember to put it there.
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you kindly. I guess I can't say Venerable Panabasa. It's a reflex after 200 years, but
yeah.
Thank you kindly. Mr. Panabasa, should I call you Mr. Panabasa or just?
Good old Panabasa, my friend Panabasa.
Friend Panabasa. You're still definitely a senior lay teacher. I've been teaching courses as a lay teacher, but you're much more senior lay teacher anyways.
Possibly. Yep. You've been at it for quite a while, though.
Yeah. Ah, yeah. About 25 years. But thank you kindly. It was a good talk. Good talk. It had to be said. I'm glad we did this video.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's good to get back on the show again. It's been a month.
Yeah. Good to have you back, because you're in transition and still in transition. So we'll do more videos as your transition unfolds and as life in the world unfolds.
Uh-huh. So yeah, we'll be back doing the show more regularly, I hope.
Yeah, I want you back then, definitely. Yeah, and as you adjust and get in your groove and work out your routine or what you're doing, and good luck with publishing your books.
Very good. And good luck getting yourself a new place.
Yeah, I got a notice of eviction just this week. I lost the adjudicator's meeting and spurious COVID violations. You can imagine, I've been here 16 years. I think the real reason is, they can get much more rent money after I leave after 16 years because of rent control. So that's the motive. They use COVID as an excuse and the lawyers.
Well, part of the excuse or part of the reason probably, but I assume another part is because, you're the notorious Nazi.
Well, I think that's what the landlord claims, but I don't think the courts could go along with that. Still, yeah, I mean, it's suspicious. And Legal Aid said they haven't had a case like this. They haven't seen this before, like getting evicted for minor COVID violations. So, yeah.
Well, maybe you can sue them or something.
Well,
or just leave it alone. Yeah, just leave it alone. Just shake the dust off your shoes and move on to a better place.
Yeah, I'm still consulting with my, I have a lot of good friends helping me in legal advice, and I'm consulting with friends.
Yeah, it's good to have friends.
Yeah, I've got friends, yeah.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yes, you are a good friend. It's good to talk to you. And I don't have the formality of the monk relationship either.
Yeah, now we're just friends. Two guys.
Yep, two Dharma guys. Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Palavasa.
Yeah, you're welcome.